You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
The implications of a $130 a barrel world. We're talking about that in part here on The Takeaway. With us is Majora Carter, who's the founder of Sustainable South Bronx, right here in New York. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
We talked a bit about grease prices skyrocketing and that creating a kind of aftermarket for grease. Are there commodities in a sort of new energy reality that suddenly become business propositions in neighborhoods that are concerned about sustainability?
I would hope so. I even think that the yellow grease market is one. I mean, I think found it kind of interesting that these guys were building a market.
Yeah.
And we're afraid of competition.
It is interesting. Yeah, it's really
like,
interesting.
Guys, look, it's America. And that's what we should be trying to encourage.
And they're entrepreneurs at every level.
Exactly.
Well, a different level to encourage sort of green and sustainable behavior takes place at the shareholder level, at the corporate level. And they may have started the world's largest oil company, but they don't apparently have much clout anymore. The Rockefellers, who are, of course, the founder of Standard Oil, which became Exxon, may get you a good table at the Four Seasons, but it doesn't impress the shareholders of the modern company. This week in Dallas, ExxonMobil held its annual shareholder meeting, and an effort by the great-grandchildren of John D. Rockefeller to make Exxon reduce its greenhouse gas emissions and embrace renewable energy was defeated big time. Activist shareholders say they will continue to fight, but it was sister Pat Daly who helped convince the Rockefeller family to take up the global warming cause at the shareholders' meeting. She was at the meeting this week representing her diocese and 12 million shares. Sister Daly, was this a real debate about climate at the Exxon meeting or kind of a stick in the eye for the Rockefeller family to butt out of company affairs?
Actually, I think it was a great win, and if I could offer here, when companies and shareholders, I should say, at annual meetings receive such amazing votes as over 30% mm-hmm. or over 40% at a meeting where their shareholders are asking the board of directors to consider something, truly over 3% is a great win for shareholders. Mm-hmm. And because of that, and because these issues have been before the shareholders at ExxonMobil, that's really what has instigated the Rockefellers, not just beginning this year to raise their concerns publicly, but to really present this in a way that this is now not just about the company's resistance to look at alternatives, but it's a corporate governance. It's a real lack of governance, good governance, on behalf of what should be an independent board of directors.
Well, how do you get Exxon to think about global warming when their business is actually selling carbon? I mean, that's what they do.
Well, what you do is you're asking an energy company, and they are calling themselves an energy company, how are you going to be profitable for your shareholders 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now? And it's not just a couple of religious groups here who have, longtime shareholders from the Rockefellers who are asking these questions. These resolutions have been both proposed by and then supported by some of the largest pension funds in the world, such as the state of New Jersey, the state of Connecticut, Maine. I can go down a whole list, representing billions of dollars worth of shares. The resolution that I...
Well, hold on just a second, mm-hmm. Sister Pat. I want to ask Majora, what do you make of the initiative that Pat is talking about, where you're using sort of capitalist clout to get corporations to change versus the kinds of neighborhood level and street level initiatives that you've done so well with?
Oh, as far as I'm concerned, this is a neighborhood
really?
Level. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We've also participated in shareholder actions, actually that with your colleagues at the Interfaith Center for Corporate Responsibility in my community with another project there. And so it is really important. And I think that 30% really was saying to folks, look, into the oil companies, and in our case, a sewage sludge pelletizing plant, that their shareholders are really interested in how their bottom line is going to be impacted in the future with the changing energy market, with the changing modes of everything going forward in terms of this is a new economy that we're looking at, and global warming and all the other environmental issues are coming to the fore. So I think this is a huge step in the right direction.
Pat, you talked about corporate governance for a moment. Would your ultimate goal to be that Exxon, as part of its corporate mission, actually looks at non-oil fuels and getting out of the business of selling oil altogether?
Obviously, Exxon is, we're talking about the largest company in the world, the most profitable company on the history of the planet, We're asking the company, if you're going to be profitable, tell your shareholders how you're going to do that in the next few decades. And we've had similar resolutions before companies since 91 now, actually, asking them, you know, how are you going to profit in a risky, carbon-constrained world? And this year, specifically on this resolution that was also presented yesterday at Chevron and the Southern Company, next week it'll be at General Motors, we withdrew it at Ford because they said, you're right, we need to show our shareholders how we're going to pull this off.
Well, Sister Pat Daly, thanks for joining us. You're a Dominican nun and executive director of the Tri-State Coalition for Responsible Investment. That's an organization of 40 Roman Catholic dioceses and congregations of women and men in the New York metropolitan area, talking about the success, as she put it, in not passing a resolution, but certainly getting a resolution discussed at the Exxon Mobil shareholders meeting in Dallas this week. You know, Majora, it's interesting. $130 a barrel oil creates opportunities because suddenly things that weren't valuable become valuable. That produces sort of entrepreneurs, and you've got a whole sort of different kind of marketplace. And I suspect that has a really positive impact on organizations like yours.
Yeah, the pollution-based economy is no longer going to be applicable pretty soon, and we're going to have to think about how we can transition into a new green economy that's also going to spark new kinds of entrepreneurs, new kinds of industries, and hopefully we're going to be able to use it so that we can use a new green economy to move people out of poverty as well as remediate the environment.
So the background of what's happening now makes people, organizations, groups, companies more open to innovation and taking a look at how their policies are affecting the environment. Can you give us an example of something that you think is shot up high on the agenda in this national discourse because of what's been going on?
Yeah, we've seen investments in clean tech or any kind of industry that has a net benefit for the environment through the processes or products they increase. Since last year to this year, it's moved from $3 billion to nearly $6 billion in investments.
That's
you know,
double.
Yeah. Is it anywhere near what's happening in the digital economy? Not yet. Of course not, but we're moving in that direction.
That's upfront VC investment in companies.
Pretty much.
And then there's
lots
still
of
the sort
VC.
Of the revenue sort of actually making these businesses pay. That's the happy story that we may see in the next 10 years.
Yes, we're hoping it gets a lot more happy.
And it's also interesting at a time when we read stories about how venture capitalist VCs are holding on to money given the uncertainty of what direction the economy is going in and what shape the banks are in. But what do you think is going to be the next wave of issues that people take on as a group?
Looking at cost benefits analysis, like what are the real costs to having incredibly unhealthy, environmentally challenged communities? Public health costs, transportation costs. You know, if people are constantly using trucks and cars, they're ripping up roads that basically taxpayers are going to have to pay. We're also going to be looking at what does that mean as more storm surges happen, because of like really horrible, storm events, et cetera, that are actually brought on by problems within the environment itself. And so we're looking at all those costs that eventually we're going to have to pay. And if we're not looking at making investments that, whether it's horticultural infrastructure, whether it's energy conservation, whether it's the kind
public
of
transit.
Exactly.
Even public transit. Radical public transit
people
would be great in New York.
People are going to start freaking out really soon if the costs continue to keep going up.
Well, we've been asking people what it would take for you to get out of your car. What if free public transit was available? Dominique writes us, yes, free public transit would be a great service to all the public. Whatever you drive, walk, or ride a bike, like myself, everyone benefits. Public transportation is the future. Let's make it available to everyone, for everyone. Would you ride public transit if it was free? That's a sort of a silly question.
I ride public transit even when it's not. I don't drive. I'm a terrible driver.
Well, you live in New York City.
Exactly.
So sometimes it's very advantageous not to be driving and to be on the train or subway or
but
bus.
But the important thing is that, you know, we've got a great system here. And it really is like, how do you make sure that the system works? Because if it doesn't, all it's going to do is make people annoyed. And then they think, oh, I've got to get a car any old way. But and that's defeating the whole
purpose. But it's interesting. The annoyance encourages people to maybe find a better way, and that's in some ways what the sustainable economy is
all about.
Or
the inability to pay. Right. I mean, if you can't pay, you're going to find for a cheaper alternative,
exactly.
Even if it's cheaper in the long run as opposed to the upfront cost.
Precisely.
Majora Carter, thank you so much for being with us from Sustainable South Bronx. You'll come back?
Oh, very quickly, Femi, true to her word, she found out that enormous diamond came from South Africa. What is it? 100 carats, and it sold for $6 million. Yeah. Thanks, Femi.
It's like, for all of those, no more calls, we have a winner. Keep your responses coming to anything you heard on today's show. You can email or call us anytime, 1-877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.